Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all get joined us once again, both for our radio audience here in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com. We're glad that you all could be with us. Also, those tuning in through online affiliates around the world, we're glad you all could be with us as well. I'm excited to welcome Ravi Shankar to our program today. Ravi's written a book that is already a bestseller on Amazon, and I know you guys are going to enjoy it. It takes us into his life lessons, and some issues I think all of us can be able to relate to and should be concerned about. The book is called Correctional. We'll talk to Ravi not only about the writing of Correctional, but also what it was like for him to reflect on some life experiences and what he wants all of you to know about his life and also what he's been able to see. Ravi, thank you so much for the time.
It's great to be with you, Cyrus.
So, Ravi, I read this book with a lot of interest, and I went into it honestly not knowing what to expect. But I think as someone who has never met you before, you definitely take us into not only your life journey, but also the reason why you're so passionate about things, especially when it comes to the rights of others. What has it been like for you, Ravi, to see the way that people are responding to the book?
Oh, it's been amazing, actually. I was just on a show in Alabama where a caller said that it was compulsively readable. And as a poet, to reach a large audience in this way has been gratifying. But also, my hope has always been that this book is not a static literary artifact, but the kind of thing that communicates the urgency of kind of getting involved and advocating for a more equitable society. And yes, definitely. The book seems to be reaching a wide spectrum of different people, which I've been very happy to see.
Ravi, the thing that surprised me that I did not know I would see in the book is how this is something that you kind of address in and out of the correctional system per se. Because one of the things I took away, and I'm curious as you, as a writer, what you would think, is that I think in many ways you talk about the institutions that are there around all of us. You talk about growing up and people wanting to be able to put you in a box. And I think a lot of people can relate to that about how they may perceive you to be one way, regardless of whether you are that way or not. Did you know going into the book that it was going to have such a wide-ranging view of how we look at life and also look at each other?
No, I mean, that's the beautiful revelatory thing about writing, and also the agonizing thing is that it's in the process of revision, rewriting, getting responses from my agent and trusted readers that a lot of those things develop. But you're exactly right. I mean, there are a number of threads in this narrative, and one of which is my parents' own immigration from South India and me growing up bicultural in the U.S. And of course, for Asians, there's this kind of model minority myth where we're supposed to be studious and diligent and hardworking and quiet. And I certainly felt all of those expectations. Also, my father's an engineer, and so I was kind of pushed to be a scientist or a doctor, while my true love is language. And so, I think that a lot of people can relate to that as well. But for me, experiencing in the book, the core of the story has to do with these 90 days I had spent at Hartford Correctional, which coincided with me being promoted to full professor at a state university in Connecticut. And the things that I saw in there, I cannot unsee. And it made me realize that we're actually very deeply connected to those who are marginal or who have been kind of stigmatized as criminal that we'd rather not think about. In fact, we are deeply connected to. And that was part of the realization that I had that connected perhaps to my own sense of my identity being multiple in some ways. And I really wasn't either what my parents wanted me to be, which was a dutiful Hindu Tamilian Brahmin boy, nor what the outer world saw of me. It's taken me a long time to kind of integrate my identity in a healthy way, I think, and writing Correctional has been part of that process.
To that point, one of the things that you do reference, as you mentioned, what you were able to see in the facility, Ravi, is, you know, we think about the community. And also, you talked about your own love of words. You met somebody. You actually had a bunkmate for a while who also had a love of words. And he talked about with you about writing and drawing. That was kind of part of how he felt at the time. What was it like for you to see that the community that was even there and the talent that was there that many people would never know about?
Yeah, it was, when I first went in and I was terrified, I just wanted to disappear into the wall. All of my images of what incarceration was like was from, you know, shows like Oz and Prison Break, and I was kind of horrified. And in fact, the more I spent, and I wasn't in a cell, I was in a dorm with 60 other men. There are two dorms, so 120 men, Dorm A and Dorm B in Hartford Correctional, and probably about 95% of the men were men of color, African-American, Latino. And we spent a lot of time talking to each other, and they shared their intimate stories, their hopes, and their dreams, and I realized that they weren't really that different from me. And in fact, there wasn't really any mechanisms to help them rehabilitate, to learn skills, to help their reentry back into society. And so you're right, they spend a lot of time doing things, drawing, and Chaos, I think, is the inmate you reference, who actually was illiterate when he first came to Hartford Correctional. I helped him write his first words, which was one of the great teaching moments of my life, I think. And then other really ingenious, I mean, you would be amazed at the things that some of these men were able to build, from little items that they took out of the chow hall and, a paper clip and a cardboard box, and all of a sudden they've got a convection oven going. And so they really, a lot of them had been counted out from a very young age. And I felt like, God, with the right resources, with the right support, these men could be doing amazing things. And instead, here they are languishing, costing the taxpayers money, and not really getting better, but actually probably in some ways hardening and getting worse. And that was really eye-opening for me as well.
I think, too, that, you know, we hear a lot of times, and I think that's why I'm so glad you wrote this book, Robbie, because a lot of times, unfortunately, we hear numbers. And I think, unfortunately, whether we mean to or not, and I'm a person, Robbie, who believes that the majority of people want to do good, can be good, but a lot of times, unfortunately, people get kind of caught up in their own world. And we hear statistics about people in prison and the things that may happen, and we think about the numbers. You got to actually see the people. And in the chapter, An Unexpected Commencement, you wrote this, for those who have the print edition, the hardcover edition on page 89, about what you saw. You wrote, "Around me in a mass of fellow human beings in jagged rows, a few are covered completely, wrapped in blankets like corpses, and others are on their mattresses shivering, snoring, or going through what might be termed mild seizures. Some men were huddling together, gesturing in the air with unmistakable, inscrutable resolve. Others were splayed out prone, eerily motionless." You talk about what you were able to see and what you were supposed to be staying in, sleeping in. What was it like for you? You mentioned about the things you could not unsee. Was that one of those things you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. That was the first night of my intake. And Hartford Correctional in the summertime gets so overcrowded that they literally had the men sleeping on the floor of a gymnasium. And when I first went in, I really couldn't believe it. It did feel like we were in this nuclear fallout shelter or something. And these men with very little possessions, and some of them clearly, I mean, and I would come to realize in time, some of these men certainly had substance abuse issues or mental health problems, none of which were being addressed on the inside in any real way. In fact, I saw the opposite, a kind of casual sadism from the correctional officers to the warden on down. And yes, that was that first moment. And, you know, I know a lot of the men that I met were going to be in there for longer. There's a generational effect that ripples through with mass incarceration. So their own parents, one of whom might have been incarcerated, and they were leaving behind children and the like. And so I was only in there for 90 days. But that first, 48 hours or so when I was in that gymnasium floor, one of the longest, most agonizing periods of my life, where I just sat there and thought about how, in the midst of this really successful life, I'd taken a wrecking ball to my career, my community, my family, for ways I didn't understand. And then I looked around, and many of the men, though they came from different socioeconomic backgrounds than me, shared the same skin color as me. And so I was both different from and connected to many of the men around me. And yeah, that is one of those things I'll never be able to forget.
Ravi, and I think for a lot of people who are hearing this, that's why I think thinking about individuals as a community is so important. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Conversations Live. Ravi Shankar is our guest today. We're talking with him about his best-selling book, Correctional, that's out now through our friends at Amazon.com and through your favorite local bookstore. We'll remind you of that a little bit later. There also in that chapter, Ravi, there's something that comes up that you revisit later on, and that is mental health. Talk to us about that. And how that is another topic that you address here. You really go there and talking about your own mental health. In that chapter you talked about, how unfortunately there was disinterest from those who were in the facility about asking about if you had, attempted self-harm. What was it like for you to address that topic?
Yes, there many of the men, and I should say you had talked about community, and that was the amazing thing to me, was that in spite of all the institutional pressure, otherwise these men did form. You would see these men with tattoos and scars braiding one another's hair and cooking mofongo, this kind of Puerto Rican dish together, and creating a kind of counter community, if you will. And, in terms of mental health, I felt absolutely this book, I had to kind of reckon with my own failings and my own ways in which I might have been suffering that I wasn't able to address, my own trauma. But then also many of these men spoke to me about their broken childhoods or having been in trouble with the law at a young age for just, maybe smoking a joint and then being arrested and having a criminal record and then being on the streets and not really finding any real viable support. At Hartford Correctional, the medical facilities really were suboptimal, to say the least. And I remember still this correctional officer kind of sounded a little like John Wayne, and he was the one that was meant to administer mental health. And at the beginning of his shift, he would come in and say, "Screws and schizos, come get your Skittles." And, that was the way that he introduced the pills that some of these men had to take, which, of course, were not oftentimes the ones that doctors had told them to take. They weren't the right medication. And no one was really addressing any of these issues as far as I could see.
As you talk about community, one thing we also see in correctional, again, another thing we may have heard, Ravi, is that not all criminals are created equal, right? The way that pedophiles are treated in prison, we see the difference in that. What was that like for you to see how even there they had their own sense of justice and even right from wrong?
Yes, there's a whole code of etiquette that I didn't really realize until I got in there. And there were some things that, I met people who told me things like, if you're in the cafeteria, you never reach across another man's plate. That's considered a sign of disrespect. And certainly there was this kind of a hierarchy, as you mentioned. I met some men who were in there for pretty violent crimes, for gun charges and for felonies. And then others who, I met an old man who was in there for trespassing, and he'd fallen asleep in somewhere he shouldn't have, and he'd gotten arrested and had a cash bond he couldn't pay and had been languishing in jail for months waiting for his court date. So there was this sense that, though, you're right, at the bottom were, sexual predators or pedophiles, and then the drug users, the licks, as they called them, were kind of a strata above them. And, near the top were the people who had purported to do these terrible things in some way, or those who had a white-collar crime. And I would strangely find myself, though I was just in there for a misdemeanor for driving on a suspended license, because my case had such notoriety in Connecticut and I appeared on television during the time of my promotion, all of a sudden I became part of that upper a class of prison life in some way. It was such a weird, I was humiliated while my life was being broadcast on the local news. And on the inside, I became this kind of folk hero that everyone wanted to talk to, get advice from. Correctional officers were asking about college. And it was, again, one of these things where I'm not what it seems on the inside. I'm not what it seems on the outside. I'm something else completely.
When you said that, Ravi, I thought about the cartoon that appeared that you actually share in the book with the bread and water reference. And I think that is interesting to know how people can view things, right? I want to ask you about being out, but also being free, because the two are not necessarily, I think, definitely together. I think even as I was reading Correctional, I think even you shared, and I'm curious to see your thoughts about this, to hear it from you, that not everyone who's walking among us is free. How is your idea of freedom and what that means? How has that evolved?
Yes, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people who are out that I met, there was almost a fait accompli that they felt like they would find themselves back in. I met a few people who were homeless who actually looked forward to going back in the wintertime so they could have a warm place and three meals. What I realized is that, you know, freedom is this kind of intrinsic quality that allows us to empathize with others. And even in our normal life, we might be working a job and we might be imprisoned in our own desires, our own addictions, our own very fixed point of view that doesn't allow us to evolve and doesn't allow us to engage with other people as complex, real human beings. I think that's a form of prison. I met, you know, this someone who's Islamic in prison who had spent a lot of time reading and working on himself and his mind, and I think he still had 4 or 5 years left in his sentence, and yet he was freer than a lot of the people that I encounter day to day. And so, you know, I think that freedom is an inherent quality of the soul, and it's different than being out. In fact, a lot of these people, they might be out, but because they have a criminal record, because they have to go to probation and parole, because they don't have anyone to support them on the outside, they're not free. They probably will end back up in jail. And that's one of the great tragedies of our American criminal justice system. The rates of recidivism are really high compared to any other country in the developed world. And yet we spend more money on imprisoning people. And so, you know, what does that mean that we're kind of funding this broken system? That was one of the questions I found myself asking.
We are really able to see your empathy come through in this book, even before the experience that we've been talking about here. Ravi, where do you think that empathy comes from, that empathy for others in their situations?
Well, I think when you grow up, as many of your listeners probably know, as an immigrant in some ways and someone who isn't really accepted, and I had a little different life in that I moved back to India, and I write about it in the book when I was in third grade, and I lived out there for about 18 months. And so when I was in India, I was not accepted either. I was seen as too American in India and
yeah,
too Indian in America. And that feeling of exile, I think, makes someone observe, but also kind of deepens your understanding for other people who've been othered in some way. And from a very young age, you know, if I saw someone being bullied, I always tried to take up for them or to see if I could help them. But I won't make myself out to be a saint by any means. You know, I had certainly a lot of defects, but the silver lining of this experience that I write about at Correctional, where I encountered these men in my normal life I never would have met, was that it really just cracked my heart wide open. And I thought, geez, you know, here we are in the land of the free, the home of the brave, the greatest democracy that the world has ever known, and yet 25% of the world's incarcerated population is here. We have 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's prisoners. And they're kind of out of sight, out of mind for most people. And I was probably among them until I actually had to experience this firsthand. And, you know, after that, you know, I feel compelled to share this story and want people to kind of open their eyes. Because here in Rhode Island, where I am, I'm talking to you from Providence, and I think we spend close to $80,000 a year on imprisoning people. Three-fourths of that is on security. And so it makes me think, what if we use that money in a different way in our communities? What would the effect be? That's one of the questions I hope my readers ask.
Well, it is a powerful look at your experience, but also at the world that we live in, Ravi. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk about it. Again, everyone, Ravi Shankar has been our guest. He's the author of the new bestseller called Correctional. It's out now through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite local bookstore. And, Ravi, how can our audience stay connected with you?
You can follow me on the socials at Empurpler, E-M-P-U-R-P-L-E-R. As you mentioned, the book is out with University of Wisconsin Press, and I'm at Poet Ravi Shankar. I teach at Tufts University, and I'm always glad to be part of any discussion, forum, book talk. So feel free to reach out. If you read the book, I would love to hear what you think. And certainly I could help connect you to any local or national resources if you're interested in getting involved in reform of any kind.
All right, Ravi. Thank you so much again. Congratulations to you. And looking forward to our next conversation together.
Absolutely. It's been a real pleasure. Take care.
Hey, you as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Thing as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Now let's go make today amazing. Take care.